Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hello, this is Pete. I am one of the content producers here at Ethical Property Partners. As well as a podcast, we have our YouTube channel, and one thing that's been working brilliantly over there are our Sophisticated Saturdays. Now, this episode includes audio from a Sophisticated Saturday show where you'll hear about a deal that Frank has recently done. In the first part, you'll get all the numbers, so if you want to take part and work out how you'd do the deal, you can grab a calculator and make some notes before listening to the second part, where Frank will tell you exactly how he structured the deal in a sophisticated way. The third and final part is exclusive to you as a podcast listener, where Frank gets grilled by an expert investor and chats about the deal in more detail. So over to Frank.
In this episode, I'm going to describe to you a property that I came across where I think most people would have walked away. But I'm going to show you after the break how actually I decided to buy the property and have since made quite a lot of money out of it. So the situation is this. I went on holiday to a coastal town in Yorkshire. Whilst on holiday, we were sat out looking out over this beautiful beach. A neighbour commented that this beat up derelict property, it's actually a three bedroom bungalow, wooden frame bungalow, broken windows, roof had, you know, bits falling off it, and that really it looked derelict. It wasn't, sadly, it was actually inhabited. But this property was for sale. And I remember talking to my wife, and our garden overlooked the garden of this property. And we said, wow, wouldn't it be amazing to have a holiday let here? And then we looked at the property and we thought, yeah, but look at the state of the property. Anyway, I went and knocked on the door because that's what you do when you're in property and you hear that a property's for sale. And I chatted to the woman in the property, and it turns out that she'd lived there with her mother. Her mother had been quite elderly, so she'd looked after her mother. But the daughter whom we were speaking to had been involved in a car accident many years before and didn't have all of her mental capacity. So the two of them had kind of looked after each other. And she explained that her brother-in-law was dealing with the sale, and she gave us his number. She actually said it had been sold already, the property had been sold. And I think a lot of people would have given up at that point. But I phoned the brother, or the brother-in-law. I phoned him and just explained. I said, look, we're on holiday. We've heard that your property's for sale. I'm interested in buying it. What's the situation? And he said, the property has been sold, we've had an offer accepted, and we're selling the property to someone else. I asked how much they were selling it for. He said £150,000. Now, to give you a bit of an insight, the plot is a large plot. It's probably 25 meters wide, around 25 meters wide, maybe 23 meters wide, and it's about 80, maybe 90 meters long, so quite a large plot, and it looks out over a beach and over the sea. So it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful, slightly elevated. I thought to myself, how can I turn this into a deal? The property is sold. That's probably market value for it. It probably was market value for the property, maybe a little bit below. It's a great opportunity. What would you have done in that situation? How would you have negotiated the deal? What would you have said to the vendor? How would you have structured the deal? How would you have made it no money down, because that's what I aim for every deal to be, no money down. They're not all no money down. I put money into some of my transactions, but this one I didn't put any money into. And how would you have made a deal out of it? I know that's not a lot of information to go off, but what you sometimes have to do in these situations is to fill in the gaps around the opportunity. I'll give you one other piece of information. So we were on holiday in this property. This was the one that was for sale. And the one to the other side of us had sold quite recently for £235,000. And that was a four bedroom house, not as good sea views, actually, quite substantially worse sea views. So that gives you a bit of an idea of the GDV, the gross development value of the plot, perhaps. So what would you do? Would you walk away? Guys, we'll give you a break. The trick here is for you to sit down with a pen and paper, grab yourselves a cup of tea, and work out for yourself, what would you do? How would you make money out of this? What conversation would you have with the brother? And that's what I'm going to share with you after the break. How did we turn this into a deal?
This is the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. To see more about our Sophisticated Saturdays, just search YouTube for Ethical Property Partners.
The first thing that I did was just ask him about the situation. I said, oh, okay, so it's going through. Is that going through smoothly? Is it going through as you want it to? Is it going through as quickly as you want it to? And he said, to be honest, and this is all on the phone, my sister-in-law is disabled, as you might have noticed. She really needs to move as quickly as possible. We've found a flat for her in the village where we live, which was about 45 minutes away. We have to keep traveling over to check on her, and she's not doing well on her own. And this sale was agreed 6 months ago, and it's taking so long for the people to buy the property from us. We're quite frustrated about it. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I genuinely was really sorry to hear that. He said, but the problem is I don't want to restart another transaction, because if that takes another 6 months, they keep telling us that it's nearly there, nearly there. However, we would be in a position to buy cash. We could buy it within a week, certainly. And I'd be in a position to pay more than 150. I'd happily pay 155. And that stopped him. I remember he went quiet. And he said, really? And I said, absolutely. I said, if you want to meet, we can have a cup of tea, a pint of beer, have a chat, and, you know, see if you'd like to explore us buying the property. And he said, I think that'd be worth doing. I sat down with him in a pub, and he and his wife, actually, so the sister and the brother-in-law. And I just explained, I said, I'd like to buy the property. I can pay cash for it and we can complete by this time next week. And I don't think he really believed me, and I appreciate that. That's a very quick purchase, isn't it? But it needed to be a bit more than he was currently getting, and it needed to be really quick, because he knew he wasn't going to complete with the other transaction. They couldn't get a mortgage on it. No surprise, it's a timber frame building, which makes it really hard to get a mortgage on. Not impossible. Birmingham Midshires would lend, for example, on a non-standard construction. But the bathroom was really tired, the kitchen was really tired, that it was infested with lice and fleas I think it was actually. It smelt really bad, there was a lot of cats and I seem to remember there was feces in the property. It really hadn't been looked after well, which was another reason why he needed to get his sister-in-law out of the property as quickly as possible. He said yes, you can buy it as quickly as, if you can buy it that quickly, you can have it. I phoned my solicitor on the Friday morning. I took his solicitor's details, etc. I phoned my solicitor on the Friday morning and said, can you do this today? And she said, I can, Frank. I think she charged me double fees. She cleared her diary. And an hour later, she phoned me back and she said, Frank, I can only do this if the other side solicitor responds to me. And she's not returning my calls. I've emailed and I've called 4 times. She's not returning my calls. So I phoned the other side, the gentleman and his wife, and I spoke to them. I said, something odd is going on here. Have you spoken to your solicitor? And they said, yes. In fact, they'd been in to see her that morning. And they said, she really tried to put us off from selling to you. She said that we should stay with our current purchaser, that you were probably not in a position to buy it cash, etc. And I said, oh, that's unfortunate, because she's refusing to speak to my solicitor, which means that my solicitor can't do anything. They have to talk, they have to exchange the contracts, etc. And if she's not willing to speak, there's not a lot we can do. And he confided in me. He said, I think there's something else going on. He said, is there any way that we can do this without my solicitor holding it up? And I said, actually, there is. We could do a personal exchange of contracts tomorrow on Saturday. I've never ever exchanged contracts on a property on a Saturday, because what solicitor does that? But you don't need a solicitor to buy and sell a house. It had no mortgage on it, and I wasn't using a mortgage to buy it. And so there's no legal requirement to say you have to use a solicitor. And again, you can see there's numerous steps here where people would give up, most people would give up. And so I said to them, actually, we can exchange contracts tomorrow. They said, really? I said, yeah, absolutely. I'll give you 10% deposit. So I'll give you £15,500 tomorrow. We'll exchange contracts ourselves, and then we'll take the exchange of contracts to our solicitors on Monday, and then your solicitor will know that I'm serious because I'll have given you £15,500 and she has to act in your best interest. So that's what we decided to do. Now, in the meantime, I jumped on the phone and spoken to a few people to lend me the funds. I didn't put any of my own money into the purchase. I did fund the development myself, or part of the development. But the purchase was 100% funded by one other investor actually. So I phoned around, found someone who had £155,000 to put into this, and offered them quite a high interest rate. I offered them 1% a month, which is quite high, but no setup charge, no exit charge, etc. And so that's how I bought it. I had that money by the end of the day, and this is the value of having people who are willing to lend you money quickly. I told them it wasn't for very long. I only needed about 30 days to be able to get my own finance in place, which I achieved. I don't like paying 1% a month, it's quite high. The couple came over to where we were staying on holiday. We sat down around the kitchen table, had a cup of tea together, they met my wife. So I printed off an exchange of contracts. You can download them from the Law Society website, a standard contract. I filled it all in, printed it off. We exchanged contracts. I paid them the money in a brown paper bag, and we exchanged contracts. Now, I did protect myself because I thought, do they seem trustworthy? They absolutely did. Salt of the earth people, down to earth Yorkshireman and his wife. But you still want to be protected. So what I said to them was, look, if you withdraw from the purchase, I can't lose my money. So what I want to do is I want to do a loan agreement that runs alongside it. So I did a loan agreement that I lent them the £15,500, and if in 2 weeks' time they hadn't sold the property to me, they had to repay the loan. No interest, but they had to repay the loan, because I knew that if they then tried to sabotage the purchase somehow, or their solicitor frustrated the purchase and I couldn't buy it, I could hold them to this loan agreement, I could take them to court, and it was a cut and dry loan agreement that said the money had to come back to me. I just had to protect myself. And that's something that I don't think many solicitors would have thought of, let alone many purchasers. Just to have a layer of insurance and think, yeah, if I went to a judge and said, this is the situation, I gave them £15,500, they haven't given it back to me, here's the loan agreement, I think I would have been rock solid on that. So that's how I did it. On a Saturday morning, we were around the dining room table, we exchanged contracts on a property we'd only agreed to buy on the Thursday and really should have been buying on the Friday, except that their solicitor had, been awkward to say the least. And that was a topic that he brought up around the dining table. He said, we think we know what's going on, Frank. And I said, oh, what's that? He said, we think the solicitor is in cahoots with the purchaser because we've found out that actually they know one another. And all of a sudden it became clear the solicitor was trying to slow down the process so that their friend could buy the property. Really unethical, could have got in a lot of trouble with the Law Society, probably should have been reported, but that's not how I play cricket, and so I left them to it. When they then went to their solicitor on the Monday and said, we've exchanged contracts, they said, well, you know, what about the money? Has Frank paid you? And they said, oh yeah, he's paid us £15,500. That's the normal amount, isn't it? And they said, yes, it is. The solicitor said, yeah, that's the normal amount. And so from that point onwards, the solicitor took it seriously. We were actually ready to complete on that day. On the Monday. By the Monday afternoon, all the funds were with my solicitor, the balance of funds. I obviously had a receipt to say to the solicitor, I've paid 15 and a half. Here's the balance of the 155. Their solicitor took another 2 days. We actually completed on the Wednesday, which is still pretty amazing. So we agreed the deal on the Thursday evening. We completed on the Wednesday. So less than a week, 6 days it took us to complete in total. Now you might be thinking, if it's so quick to buy a house, why do they normally take 3, 4, 5, 6 months? Well, the reason for that is normally people do searches. Now, local authority searches are taking at least 4 weeks at the moment, sometimes longer depending on the local authority. And of course, getting finance takes a long time if you're going for bridging finance or mortgage finance, especially mortgage finance at the moment. The couple came around, I actually helped them to empty the possessions they wanted out the property. One of the things I always offer vendors is to leave whatever they wanted to leave in the property, and they left a lot because a lot of it was dirty, a lot of it was moldy, and a lot of it was infested with fleas. So they bought a van, I helped them to load whatever they wanted to take to the flat for their sister, and she went within a week. We were still on holiday, we were still there on holiday. At the moment, you probably think to yourself, well, that's great, Frank. You've bought a house really quick, but you've paid over market value for it. Let me just give you some of the numbers on this property. It's cost us about £300,000 to develop it. We've developed it, and you'll have seen other videos about this. This is our 7-bedroom, 7-bathroom holiday let on the in Filey Bay in Yorkshire. The property we've split, we got planning permission to split it into two properties. It's got an adjoining door, so it's actually able to be let as one property, but we've got planning permission to use it as two properties if we choose to. Two front doors, two kitchens, two staircases, etc. And one of the sides is a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom property, and the other side is a 3-bedroom, 4-bathroom property. And so they can be let as separate units, they can be let as one unit. The combined value of those is, it's difficult to know exactly because it's so much more expensive than anything else in the area, but I would expect a minimum sale price of 600,000 for the two combined, and possibly with the right buyers, 700,000. So we've spent 155 on the purchase, we've spent 300 on the works. We actually nearly demolished the whole property. We took down two walls because they were full of rot. We've extended upwards. You can watch the video where I've done a walkthrough of the property, but we've put dormers on the front, dormers on the back. We've extended backwards as well. We've put glass balconies on the back. We've really done it to a high standard. And so the amount of value that we've built into that, if we were to sell it, we have no intention of selling it, we're now letting it. It's actually let for this summer and all the school holidays next year already, so it's let 18 months in advance. That's how desirable it is, and we're continually putting the prices up because if you're fully let, then you're too cheap, and so the prices that we're getting for that are eye-wateringly high. I cannot believe how well it is monetizing, but of course Lady Luck's played its role there slightly. We've had the pandemic. We're actually going to refinance and get all of our money back out of it. The purchase was financed by a finance investor. I actually funded the development myself, and now we'll refinance and take all of our money out. It'll be lovely cash cow for us because it's let by the week. One of the larger of the two properties lets for over £2,000 a week at the moment, which is phenomenal. Now obviously you don't get that all year round, that's because it's summertime at the moment. There's an opportunity, guys, that I grasped with both hands. I didn't give up, even when I was told it was sold, even when I was told no, they didn't want to sell it, even when the solicitor decided they didn't want to have me involved, I still persevered. And here's the thing, I served the vendor. They were delighted. They were shaking my hand and saying thank you. They were saying on that Wednesday morning when I had the keys and they were, I was helping them move their furniture into the van, they were saying thank you. We can't believe that you've actually done what you said you were gonna do. We can't believe that these people wasted our time for 6 months. And that's the thing, if you snooze, you lose the deal. You cannot take months to buy an amazing deal. And the value wasn't in the property. The value of this was in the siting of the property, in the development plot itself. It's important to recognize that I've raised the value of that area now because these properties are 4-star properties. They are raising the quality of holidays that people can have there. today I have Liz Strama with me. Welcome, Liz.
Hi.
Liz is going to interview me with all of the questions that you guys have asked on the various platforms about the transaction that we've just covered. So, Liz, I will hand over to you.
Thank you very much. So, when you first spoke to the daughter, she mentioned the property had already been sold, but she still gave you her brother-in-law's number anyway. So what made you contact him knowing that property had already been sold?
Oh, what a good question. What you mean, apart from my massive competitive drive and a huge ego that I can do a better deal than anyone else in the whole world. That's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but not entirely. I just... hunger for the deal. I owned the house next door. I knew the area really well. I'd owned it for about 5-6 years. It performed really well as a holiday let. The view was better. The location was better. The amount of land was massively bigger. And it basically had a derelict falling down house on the plot. So you couldn't get that plot for much less. No one had seen its development value. So the people that were buying it were planning to fix up the house that was already there. So yeah, just I'm like a dog with a bone with a deal. Like there's one at the moment in, I won't mention where it is, but in a town close to me. And this property started off on the market about 3 years ago at £1 million. And it's now dropped to just under 70% of that and has been sat on the market that whole time. And I've just been watching it and I can't monetize it. I couldn't monetize it at £1 million. And now it's dropped to just under 700. And I'm thinking, do you know what? I could make money out of that now. I know what strategy I want to run on it. And so I've just decided, yeah, at this price point, after 2 years, I think the vendor's probably, I know the vendor situation. I've been asking around. So I know where they live. They're actually overseas. And so I've come to the conclusion that, you know, this month is the right month to drop them a letter, reach out to them and explain that actually, so we're in the middle of October as we record this, actually they could hand the keys over to me before Christmas and have forgotten about it, and actually I can pay them £1 million for the property. So it's that hunger, it's a patience when you need to be patient. There's no point when it first went on the market and it was beautiful, it was £1 million. There was no point. They were optimistic. They felt it was worth £1 million, blah, blah. Now they'll be kicking themselves for doing it up the way they did it up, for the fact that it's, you know, sat on the market for 2 years and they've had all that opportunity cost of that money. And so sometimes you have to be really patient and other times you have to be super motivated and super active. And that's what I did. I was making phone calls. It consumed me for about 3 days, this deal. And I said to Vanda, my wife, I said, like, are you okay with us abandoning our beach holiday while I go sort this out? Like, I had to go to the bank and arrange a massive amount of cash to buy the property, to exchange on it on a Saturday, for example. I went and met them for a drink on, like, the Thursday evening, I think it was. And so... Yeah, I think just spot when there's an opportunity there, taking swift action and being confident you're going to do a deal until they say there's no deal to be had here. And no one said that to me. And she says, you know, we've got a buyer, the sale's agreed, it's going through. That isn't a no. That's a, okay, now we've got a bit of a challenge. And then when I chatted to the brother, it was, well, we've got a sale agreed, but we're quite disappointed. Nothing seems to be happening. The sale was agreed 6 months ago. They still haven't got themselves any finance. But we're wary of starting the whole process from the start again. And for me, that was like a come on in and make an offer. You know, for a lot of people, that'd be, oh, okay, not to worry. Well, let me know if it falls through. And that's just not my attitude. You know, these people needed my help. And so I was as proactive as possible in solving their problem for them. And they are delighted now as a result. And they're delighted I was so proactive. Yeah.
So the property had sold for £150,000. You offered £155,000. Because it all happened so quickly, were you able to do any research, any due diligence or anything at all before you offered that figure? Or was it literally just confidence in your own market knowledge that allowed you to offer that straight away?
I'll be honest, I did no research whatsoever in terms of comparables, because sometimes it's really important to know your comparables. If you're buying a property that you want to refinance quickly, especially if it's a single AST rental buy to let, or if you're looking to sell a property in the next few years, then it's very important that you know your market comparables. But I have no intention of selling this property in probably the next decade or two. I absolutely love it. I spend a lot of time up there. It's gorgeous. And I knew I was going to run it as a holiday let. And so straight away, I knew that when I came to refinance it, I would be refinancing it on a commercial basis based on the holiday let business. So bricks and mortar value really wasn't that important to me. I also knew I was going to transform it. So whatever I paid for it now was going to be multiplied several times by the time I was finished. And so those combination of factors didn't really matter. So I just sat down with a spreadsheet and I knew my rental numbers for the holiday let that we were staying in, the one that we'd had for a few years. And so I just looked at it. I looked at square footage. I looked at how many bedrooms I thought we could get. I knew I wanted to split it into two properties. I'm now splitting it into a third. I'll do a separate episode on how we're getting a third property in an area that is classified as open countryside. And so once I knew what my income would be and my gross profit, I could then work out how much I could pay. And it, you know, I probably would have gone up quite a lot. Probably would have gone up to 200 if I'm completely honest. The only other factor to consider is, can you raise that money that quickly? You know, we completed within 6 days. I needed 155 cash. I didn't have 155 cash. So I had to go and find investors. I think I went with two investors, I seem to remember. Two people I already knew, had good relationships with, offered them decent interest rates. I think I offered them 1% a month just to step in and buy it cash. So it's not cash in effect, it was, you know, private finance, but the equivalent of cash. And so one of them lent the money based on an email. That was the security they had, so that's the level of trust. And the other lent the money based on a three-page loan agreement. No solicitors involved, just signature scanned and emailed back. And so would I have paid 200K? Yeah. Could I have paid 200K? Not sure if I could have raised that extra 45 within the 6 day period. I may have been able to. But quite frankly, they didn't want more money. They weren't being greedy. They just wanted a sale as quickly as possible. The only reason I paid $5,000 more is I thought it was a nice sweetener. I thought it just emotionally, you know, Frank can do this. He can exchange this quickly. He can complete this quickly. And we're getting $5,000 more. $5,000 is nothing in the scheme of this deal, you know, so that's why I offered that little bit more.
And the brother-in-law seemed very open with you on the phone. He gave you a lot of information. Is that because he's an open person anyway, or do you have some kind of secret systems you use to get people to open up?
Yeah, it's like my spider senses, my superpower. Yeah, no, it's not at all. It's hard work and practice. He actually wasn't that open, and people are always, new partners are frequently amazed when they hear live telephone fact finds that the amount of information our prospective vendors are willing to share. And the questions that often come up are, you know, how did you get that information from them? Why were they so open? As if they're, you know, as if that's a one-off conversation. But all our conversations are like that. And it starts with your belief. So my belief to the core of my being is that I can help every vendor I speak to. And to be fair, I think I do. I think I do help every vendor I speak to, even if they don't sell to me. I also believe that I'm the best person to be helping them at that moment. So not in an arrogant way. They're lucky to be speaking to me and I'm lucky to be speaking to them. And I think if you enter that conversation with that heartfelt belief that this is a good match, that you are lucky to be speaking to them because there's a brilliant deal there potentially, and they're lucky to be speaking to you because they're in a pickle and they need some help. And as soon as you're having that deep conversation where you need one another, I think it's really, do we need them? We don't need them, but they definitely need us. Misspoke slightly there. But when you're having that deep conversation where they need you and you respect them, I guess that's how I would phrase it, all of a sudden it takes on a different perspective. So if you say, you know, so tell me, how can I help? And that's a really loaded question, basically saying, so tell me your life story, tell me why you've contacted me, etc. And if they answer it superficially, oh, I'm just interested in getting a price. And then you talk to them a bit more and then you say, so why have you contacted me rather than an estate agent? You know, you could have got an estate agent around to value the property for you. That's actually asking the same question again. Now, many people don't ask a second time. I'll ask 3 or 4 or 5 times, because if this conversation is that important, I need to know what their pickle is. Why have they phoned me? They have a property problem and they need me to solve it. And so I'll ask as many times as I need to, and unless they say, do you know what, I'm not comfortable disclosing that, Frank, but I can't remember anyone ever saying that to me. They might say something like, well, you know, I think it's worth around 200 and I've got a mortgage of around 100. That's them saying, I don't want to give you the precise details, but they've given me enough to work the deal out. You know, 100 on a 200 grand property, I know they're at 50% loan to value. I can start working around that. So was he particularly open? No. Did he divulge the information that was required for us to start to solve his problem? Yes. Why did he open up like that? I can remember the conversation I had with him. I was driving. I was driving my family out for dinner and I said to them, oh, guys, I'm sorry. I know we're on holiday, but this is the vendor from next door. I'm going to take this call if that's okay. And my wife said, yeah, absolutely. And they all heard the call on speakerphone, hands-free as I was driving, which is hilarious because it's got rubbish signal in that part of the world. So it kept dropping in and out.
I was also wondering if they did a like best next time for you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, did a critique. Funnily enough, Vanda did. Vanda said, you know, did you know his voice dropped at that point. I was like, yeah, I did actually. I messed up there. And yeah, that the way you asked that question, Frank, that really helped him to trust you in that. So we always do that because, well, we're both coaches at heart. But so it's a combination of that belief, that's massive, but also the skills. So the sales skills, the rapport building skills, the transparency with which we negotiate our transactions. And I just said to him, look, if it's taken 6 months and it's 100 and you're at 150, I said it to him on this call, I said, I think I can give you more than that and I can be in a position to complete, I think I said on Monday. And he was like, and this was Wednesday, I think it was Wednesday. And so he said, really? Something along those lines. And I said, yeah, I really think so. And so I can't remember if it was in that call or he thought about it a bit and he said, well, what would happen next? I said, well, I just need to meet with you and have a chat with you. He said, I need to talk to my wife. And I said, that's cool. I said, like, they lived about 40 minutes away from where the property was and where we were staying in our beach house. And so I just said, well, let's meet for a drink. I can meet you tonight. I can meet you tomorrow night. And he said, yeah, let's do tomorrow night then. I think he went away and thought about it and then came back and said, yeah, we were happy to have a drink with you. So we had a pint in a pub about halfway, 20 minutes from each of us. And they said, so explain how this is going to work. And I said, oh, I'm a property investor. This is what I do. So I don't need a mortgage. I'll get my mortgage afterwards. I'll buy cash. And I'm happy to pay $5,000 more. I'm happy to exchange contracts tomorrow. I said, my solicitor will be in a position to exchange contracts tomorrow. And they said, well, we're ready to exchange because ours has been ready for ages. And lo and behold, their solicitor wasn't ready. But I said, well, let's exchange tomorrow and complete on Monday. And they're like, wow. Yeah, we'll do that. And we shook hands and we looked each other in the eyes and said, yeah, we're definitely doing this. I asked to walk around it on the Friday. So they gave, I think they drove over and showed me around it because I hadn't properly been around the property. I just wanted to get a feel for it, if I'm honest. And I'm a million miles an hour. So I'm already drawing plans at that point of how I'm going to do the development and the conversion, split it into two and stuff, because that's just what excites me. And then the solicitor stonewalled our solicitor all day, basically. My solicitor cleared a diary and then phoned me about 10:30 and said, Frank, this is ridiculous. Yes, I can exchange today, but I kind of need the other side to pick the phone up or respond to an email. And so I just went back to them and I said, look, this is what's happening. My solicitor's been on the phone. She's cleared a diary. That's very expensive for me and very expensive for her. So can you speak to your solicitor? And they said, oh, she's refusing to exchange. She says we have to let the other party know and blah, 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 blah. And I said, that's fine. And then we talked about just exchanging on the Saturday between ourselves. So we did. And as soon as that had happened, the other solicitor realized that this was serious and the other transaction had come to an end. So yeah, I think those are the reasons that vendors are so open with us. I think they can sense that sincerity, sense that conviction in what we're doing and our ability to do these deals. And the funny thing is, I didn't have the cash at that point. So I'm sat in front of them saying, I'll be able to buy this cash on Monday. This is Thursday evening. But that's my confidence in my ability to make stuff happen. You know, if one of those investors said no, I'd go find another one. If one of them had said no, I'd be on the phone to people that I know that have got money, you know, commercial lenders that would be willing to do a same day loan for me. You know, there's always a way. But the first step was getting them to say yes, and I made them an offer that really worked for them. In fact, we're having a barbecue to thank all of the workmen and everyone that was involved in doing the deal. And I think we're doing it next summer now because it's a bit late in the year for a barbie. And we're inviting them. They've asked to come and see it when it's finished. And so we're inviting the vendors over and the disabled sister to have a walk around it and see it. And we've got like everyone from the original like guys that helped us to demolish it to the guys that, you know, installed the furniture and the blinds at the end. And we're just getting everyone round. We've got project managers joining us. It's just, we've got our cleaning team there. It would just be lovely to celebrate it, you know. And I think that shows that some people say that this is an unethical business. And I disagree. You know, if you can get all those people together and all have a drink and a barbie together at the end of a project, surely that shows that you're doing it in an ethical way, in a fair way, and an enjoyable way. I'm a people person at the end of the day. That's why we focus on the people before we focus on the property. And so it's important to me.
Oh, that sounds great. Everybody loves a barbie.
Absolutely.
So picking up on the point earlier, it is really unusual to exchange contracts without solicitors, especially when both sides have already got a solicitor. How did your, because you said obviously you did it between yourself and the vendor because the vendor's solicitor was stonewalling at this point. How did your solicitor react to you doing it that way? Were they frustrated with you? Were they annoyed? Were they fine with it? How did that conversation go with your solicitor when you said, look, I'm exchanging personally?
I didn't tell him. I told him on the Monday. I said, we've exchanged now. I said, here's the paperwork. I've paid the 15K. Now we can crack on. Hopefully the other side will now communicate with you. The other, my solicitor was so fed up with the other solicitor. She was just relieved that it was actually going to happen because I think I'd agreed double fees or something. But of course, she's only going to get double fees if it goes through. And I think she thought, yeah, Frank's got a deal. But clearly the vendors are messing Frank around because, you know, Frank's excited about this. I'm committed to it. So I've cleared my diary and now it looks like a massive waste of time. So that was the long and short of it. Yeah. So supportive, really. And the thing is there, I'm not being an idiot. Like I haven't gone and I've seen this before where someone goes completely off piste and does something that just shoots the deal in the foot, you know, and the solicitor's like, oh, what have you done there? I had one yesterday actually where an investor had, oh, this is bizarre. It just makes no sense. And that's the thing. If you don't know what you're doing with these transactions, you need some guidance or some help. You can't, like I say it as if like, oh yeah, I just exchanged personally, but I protected myself. Like if they broke the exchange of contracts, I had a loan agreement for the money to come back to me. I had a signed witness receipt to say that they'd actually walked away with 15 grand. Like I'm not an idiot. And yet, you know, this one yesterday, the property was being purchased out of an SPV by a purchaser. And then they started a transaction for the SPV to be bought. Well, that makes no sense. You got two transactions going on there. And it's just a small example of someone start, you know, jumping in with both feet, which is great. You sometimes have to be an action taker, and but not knowing what they're doing, you know, and you don't, I don't know what the equivalent is. It's jumping in with both feet into a 5 meter swimming pool where you can see the bottom, right? Is it dangerous? Yeah, you could have a heart attack when you land on the water. You know, you could get it slightly wrong and you know, do a belly flop or whatever. But you can see the bottom and it's 5 meters deep and there's a lifeguard on the side. That's the equivalent of what I'm doing. So it's like, wow, you know, Frank just jumped in off that diving board. That's so high or whatever. But actually, it's really, really, really safe because I've done it loads of times and I can see it and it's all safe. But the equivalent is someone running along a canal bank and just going, oh, I've seen Frank do this, so I'm jumping in. And they jump into the canal and there's like a broken trolley under the water because they can't see it and there's no lifeguard. And do you know what I mean? That's like the equivalent. And so my solicitor didn't mind because it's a rational thing to do and it actually helps the transaction, albeit very unconventional, as you say. So yeah, no problem at all. It really wound up the other side's solicitor, but I didn't really care about her feelings at that point. Her loyalty should have lay with her client, and instead they were lying with the estate agent and the purchaser, which is wrong. It's absolutely wrong. It's unethical. It's unprofessional. And so we had to break that alliance by showing commitment to the transaction.
The total development cost was $455,000, which included the purchase price. And the GDV was going to be a minimum of $600,000. So now that everything's finished with all the works and you've had it valued, what did the GDV end up being when you refinanced on this?
Well, we've recently refinanced. We've just gone through a second round of refinance, actually. And it was valued by an independent RICS value at 675. So we exceeded that. Now, that's been helped somewhat by the property market. So we've seen some appreciation that, you know, would have happened anyway. It's also been helped by the holiday let market. So holiday let rentals are going up, as in demand has gone up and prices have gone up, which helps the commercial valuation. And I'm always cautious about my valuations. So the combination added, yeah, what's that? 12% to that value, that predicted valuation. So yeah, quite pleased with that.
That literally 220,000 on the property that you bought for 155. And obviously you've said you've turned it into serviced accommodation and in that kind of area. I'm assuming that you've been pretty much sold out with people wanting to stay, and you've got the monthly cash flow coming in as well.
The cash flow on that is phenomenal now. I think I looked at it over the summer. I think we're hitting 10 grand a month, which is, yeah, pretty nice on a property that I no longer have any money left in. Next year, every single school holiday is already booked up. You know, we're in October and every school holiday next year is booked up. We haven't opened 2023 yet because we want to see what happens to the market. We think rents are going to go higher, so we want to make sure we don't let them too early at too low a price. But that valuation, 675, doesn't really matter. It could value at 500 and I wouldn't care, apart from the fact that I wouldn't be able to get all my money out. So long as I can get all my money back out and go again. I was talking to my bookkeepers yesterday and they're quite new to the role. We've had them 3.5 months now and they obviously know numbers, but they are now learning the intricacies of sophisticated property investing. In fact, one of them joked and said, I think we need a franchise, Frank, which would be funny because they're in Serbia. So maybe they'll be our first Serbian franchisees. But because they're seeing the numbers now, they're realizing it. I call it magic money. It really is magical how you can, you know, buy an asset like you say for 155, spend a chunk of money on it and then refinance and get all your money out and then have this passive income for the rest of your life. You know, it's phenomenal. And so if that 675 becomes 600 over the next 2 years, who cares? I'm still getting my income from it. If it doubles in value in the next 5 years, possible but unlikely, who cares? I'm not going to sell it. And I certainly wouldn't ratchet up the debt either and leverage it. You know, as soon as I've got my money out, I generally, not always, but I'll generally leave well alone and just allow the equity to accumulate. And I do think that's a mistake some people make. They just leverage. And so you've never got any breathing space. And in a cyclical market, you are going to see dips at some point. But yeah, I think it's important to keep an eye on the goal. And the goal here was to buy and hold. Buy, refinance and hold. And that's what I've done. Yeah, it's worked out well.
I think the biggest takeaway from this particular deal for me, and I'm sure a lot of people listening, is you've now made 220 profit on the valuation. You're making 10,000 a month, which is now ongoing. And you've got no money left in that deal. And it all started because you had that confidence in yourself to make the phone call to begin with. Even though you'd been told the property had been sold, you didn't give up at that point. Whereas I think probably 99% of people would say, oh, well, if it's been sold, I've missed out. Whereas you carried on, made that phone call, met with the person, and have that confidence to push it through, even though you didn't know for definite. You had the finance at that point, you didn't have the solicitor in place at that point, you still did it anyway. So the biggest takeaway for me is for people to just get on with it and have that confidence to make those approaches and not miss out on deals which could be making them this kind of money.
Absolutely. And we say on EPP, we say that if you find the deal, the money will follow. You know, you don't have to line it all up in advance. And I couldn't agree more with that. Full disclosure, that 10 grand a month is not every month. That was 1 month in the summer. It obviously builds up to that and then drops away from that, depending on the which week of the year it is. And also we've got obviously costs to come out of that, but it's still a very healthy net profit, like, even after taking that into account. So I didn't want everyone going, oh, 10 times 12, that's 120 grand a month. That's amazing on a 675 property. It would be, but it's not. It's not the case. There are some deductions.
Thanks for going through that deal, Frank. I think that's an absolute cracker.
Thank you, Liz. And to you guys listening, hopefully you've enjoyed this episode, another sophisticated Saturday episode. And we will see you next time. Until then, happy investing.
That was the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast from Ethical Property Partners. Use your podcast app to follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode.